Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Massachusetts is among a growing number of states debating whether to revamp its child custody laws to give both parents equal time with their kids. Two measures in the legislature would encourage courts to grant shared custody, where the child would spend no less than one-third of the time with each parent. Nearly 20 states are considering shared parenting legislation. Supporters say it would benefit the kids to have both parents in their lives equally, but critics say shared parenting shouldn't be mandated because it doesn't work for all families. To talk about the proposed bills, we're joined by Ned Holstein. He's co-founder of the National Parents Organization, which has been pushing for the changes. He was also a member of Governor Patrick's 2012 Working Group on Child-Centered Family Law. Welcome to the program. Good to have you, Ned Holstein.
Thank you, Anthony.
Also with us is retired family court judge Robert Langlois. And Robert, good to have you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Anthony. It's nice to be here.
So, Ned, I'd like to start with you. What would this bill do, and why do you think it's needed?
This bill is far more than a shared parenting bill, and it's a great bill. Governor Patrick put together a brain trust of about 20 highly qualified people to totally rewrite the Massachusetts custody statute. The Massachusetts custody statute is decades old. It's been patched up a few times with amendments, but it is still an archaic statute. In the meantime, Massachusetts families have totally changed. The pattern of family life has totally changed, and we need to catch up with it. The beauty of this bill is that, which is the result of the work of Governor Patrick's working group that you mentioned, is that it will diminish hostility between the separating or divorcing couple. And that's so important for children, to diminish parental hostility. The current statute creates and encourages a winner-loser mentality in which one parent is going to get the children, get the marital home, and probably get a lot of money too, and the other parent is going to be a visitor, see the children occasionally, have very little authority in their lives. And this is a very destructive paradigm. This bill would change that to a situation where the court is basically saying, relax, put down your weapons, you're both going to be winners, you're both going to continue to be parents to these children. Secondly, the bill also uses kinder language, which encourages the kind of result we're talking about. It uses phrases like parental responsibility instead of, quote, custody, which sounds more like incarceration. And another very good feature of this bill is that it gives the court more tools to enforce its own parenting time orders. Currently, the tools are very limited for that purpose, and you have a lot of parents who ignore what the court orders, and this will give the court more tools to deal with that.
All right. We put a lot on the table here. I want to invite our listeners into this conversation. We want to hear from you, listeners. Have you been in the middle of a contentious child custody battle? Do you think it would be better for courts to pursue shared parenting arrangements rather than giving one parent sole custody, the other only visitation rights? What do you hear in Ned Holstein's proposal there? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Ned, I just want to come back to you just to be clear. So would it actually mandate equal time for each parent, or how would that work?
Does not mandate anything except the best interests of the child. That's the only thing it mandates. It references best interests of the child seven times. And nor does it even talk about 50-50. It does say that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts encourages at least one-third of the parenting time for each parent. But encouraging something is not tying any judge's hands. It's not mandatory. It doesn't require anything except the judge's own estimation of what is in the best interest of the child to depart from that.
All right. Well, let me come over to you, Robert Langlois, as a family court judge. You've weighed in on these issues. What are you hearing? I understand you've got some concerns about this.
Well, first, Anthony, I don't know who Ned and I have to thank for scheduling us after an hour of John Stewart. But that is a tough act to follow. Also, I want to just note that I'm not here as a representative of the family court, nor of any organization that I may be affiliated with. I'm here because I care about children, always have, and care about the rights of children. It's my understanding that there are two bills presently pending in the legislature, one a House bill, I think it's House 1329, and Senate Bill 1061. And from what I've just heard Ned state, he does not seem to be in support of Senate Bill 1061, which does mandate, or would mandate, an equal sharing of responsibility absent particular findings. When I say equal, I mean equal, 50-50. So I will address my comments to House Bill 1329. I think any probate and family court judge would be opposed to any legislation which did not base, it did not require that the judge base his or her decisions on the what is in the best interest of the children or of a child. I have a few other issues that I'll bring to the fore in a minute.
But based on what we just heard Ned Holstein suggest there, he said this still would keep that fundamental value intact, right?
That's what House Bill 1329 does. The other Senate bill does not. So that's why I will be addressing just the House bill at this point. Mm-hmm. One of the problems that I think exists here is we're ignoring 40% of the children with this in this legislation. 40% of the children in Massachusetts.
Now explain that. What do you mean?
Were born to single parents. This is 1913. I'm sorry, I don't have anything more than more data than more recent than 2013. But I think that's probably a consistent trend. This doesn't mention those people at all, and that's I think one preliminary problem with this legislation. We have two sets of children in Massachusetts. We don't, but this legislation would then establish it. We have children of unmarried parents, and I'd be curious to know what Ned's position is about that in terms of the parenting arrangement, and children of divorcing parents.
All right, well, let's let Ned respond to that.
Well, first, I'm concerned we're talking about apples and oranges because the bill that I'm talking about, the one that was developed by Governor Patrick's working group, has a different number, and that is Senate Bill 834. That's different from either of the numbers, Bob, that you
that may well
referred
be.
To.
Then there may be more legislation than I was aware of.
And this is the bill that has about 50 co-sponsors in the legislature and a lot of momentum and a lot of support because it was put together by a very broad-based panel, including the bar representatives of several bar associations, domestic violence advocates, the Massachusetts Child Advocate, the Probate and Family Court Chief Justice was on this. In fact, there were three other judges as well. Eminent researchers on the well-being of children all participated in Governor Patrick's working group, and it was their work that gave rise to Senate Bill 834, which is the bill I'm talking about. Mm. Now,
but can I just get to the really, I mean, sort of this basic question about, and I understand that this bill doesn't mandate shared custody, but it the bill you favor moves in that direction. I mean, encourages more involvement by both parents. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, because the research now strongly supports that as being equivalent to the best interests of the children in most circumstances.
All right, so I just want to break this down because I don't want to lose our listeners, and I know we've talked about three bills now and there's some confusion. So I just want to come back to you, Judge Langlois, and just ask you, is that a reasonable idea to update the law in such a way that we can move toward more shared responsibility?
I don't think we need an updating in that. I think that every single judge in the probate and family court starts with the premise that it is important for a child or children to spend as much time as is appropriate and reasonable under the circumstances of each individual case presented. Hmm. I would be shocked and dismayed if that were not the case. I do believe it to be the case. I do believe that every judge acts in the best interest of children based upon the circumstances which are presented. I do not think we need further legislation, which, frankly, from what I've read, would require the judges to spend a lot more time writing findings. They're overworked to begin with. Judges in the probate and family court do not have juries to assist them in decisions. They have very little assistance from law clerks. They have to do their own work.
Well, let me just come back to one other point that Ned, and then Ned, I'll let you respond. But Ned Holstein raised this idea, and this goes back to the reason that Governor Patrick put this working group together to begin with, that these laws that are on the book currently are old, they're outdated, they don't reflect the way families are actually set up today in 2015.
I totally disagree. Families have a male component, a female component, and children. Families have always had that. Now, the way society has viewed families, particularly when families break up, has changed and modified over the years. And I believe the statement that I made a few moments ago is precisely that which the current justices and hopefully the future justices in the probate and family court, how they view these matters. I do not believe that we need to start tinkering with something which I don't believe is broken. I think that the standard which is presently in play is the best interest of the child. Ned agrees with that. I agree with that. I think every judge in the probate and family court agrees with that. And if it's not broke, why fix it?
All right, Ned, here's the question.
Probably used the wrong verb there. It should have been broken. But
I think the answer is because, unfortunately, it is broke despite the best intentions of the courts and of the judges, an estimable group of people. But if we simply look at the evidence, if we look at the data, the last time custody outcomes were collected here in Massachusetts, which was actually only about 2 years ago, 90% of the outcomes were sole physical custody of the child to one parent. Mm. And so we have not solved this problem. Let's compare that to what the American Psychological Association said in 2014, reviewing decades of research on the well-being of the child. They wrote, actually Dr. Richard Warshak wrote this, and 110 experts from around the world signed on to his conclusions, quote, shared parenting should be the norm for parenting plans for children of all ages, including very young children. Another organization called the AFCC in 2014 also convened a large working group of child development and research experts, and they concluded, quote, considered as a body of work, the efficacy of shared parenting has been supported for children of preschool age and older. And a third group, European-based scientists of about 100 people, concluded in 2014, looking at decades of research, quote, there is a consensus that shared parenting is a viable post-divorce parenting arrangement that is optimal to child development and well-being.
But here's what I want to understand. I mean, if the current standard, and I'll get you both to respond to it, and Judge, I'll come back to you, but Ned, let me just start with you. If the current standard is what's in the best interest of the children, doesn't that give the judge in family court today the discretion to say the best interest in this case is shared parenting? I mean, what stops a judge from doing that?
Well, the research clearly is telling us that in most cases, shared parenting is what's is equivalent to it, is the best interest of the child. Now, I don't fully understand why the judges are not ordering more shared parenting. All I know are the facts, and the facts are that it's not happening. It's still not happening today. It's not an issue that was cured 10 years ago because the data I cited are very recent data.
Well, let me get Judge Langlois a response to my question. I mean, I guess the question I'd put to you directly is, you have discretion. Do you have the discretion that you need if shared parenting is in the best interest of the children?
Of course. Absolutely, the discretion is there. I think the problem I have with any suggestion that the data reflects such and such is that Ned, I don't think, includes in that 90%, and I'm not sure that that's accurate, but I'll accept it for today's purposes. Most cases are decided by agreement of the parties. 90% isn't the amount of cases that judges award sole custody to one party. Most cases that are included in that 90% are cases where the parties present to the court an agreement, and that agreement is then adopted. In addition, as part of that 90% is the unmarried parents. These cases are before the court at numerous times. I mean, in the urban counties, it's far more than 40%. But in these cases, Would I be surprised? Would anyone be surprised if primary physical custody went to one parent? And in the great majority of the cases, would anyone be surprised that that's the mother? And would anyone be surprised that that is very often, if there are two parties present, by agreement of the parties? Hmm. I have a healthy degree of suspicion with regard to any time data is thrown around.
Well, I don't want to get too bogged down. I don't
because to... just to finish.
Yeah, sir.
Shared parenting. The judges in the Commonwealth believe that it is in the primarily in the best interest of any child mm-hmm. to spend a significant amount of time, depending upon the circumstances, with both parents.
Well, I'm glad we're in agreement with that. The
Good.
Question is,
I just
how are we
going
to get
to
that?
I want to just say to our listeners that we are going to be going to your calls in a minute. So, Ned, I want you to just make this the last point for the moment, because I want to go to listeners. We've got a lot of them on the call, on the line, who are about
That's
to go.
That's not fair. He started. But I'll let it go.
But we'll let you come back. Don't worry. It's all going to be fair.
So I'm glad we're in agreement that shared parenting is what is best for children. Now we have Agreed. To figure out how to get there. So the judges
may
don't,
just,
the judges don't take me into their
the definition
as to
of
why
shared.
They're not.
Okay, wait a second. We'll come back to you.
The judges don't take me into their confidence as to why they're not ordering shared parenting. So somebody else is going to ask them, well, what is in your mind? What I know is that it's not happening, and it hasn't happened for decades, and it's still not happening. And this is a very gentle bill that just nudges the courts towards shared parenting. It says we encourage it.
Right. Now, in terms of it not happening, you've written articles arguing that family courts award sole custody in over 80% of the cases, most of which, in most cases, custody going to the mother, right? I mean,
are those numbers?
I don't know where he got those numbers.
U.S. Census Bureau.
Okay.
I heard 90% a while ago, and I would assume that those numbers include the paternity actions in Massachusetts where there are unmarried parents. But
right.
maybe not. I don't know where those numbers
came
from.
So let's take some calls, because this is obviously an issue that interests a lot of people. We've got a lot of callers on the line. Let's go to Gary, who's calling from Worcester. Gary, you're on the air. What are you hearing in this debate?
Hi, good afternoon. What I'm hearing is my initial reaction is that there are some antiquated laws in the state of Massachusetts. As a divorced father of three children, that is very active in their lives. I agree with the judge's assessment that there are certainly that there is no real, I guess, right for the father to have custodial have custody of their children. I'm a very active father. I coach. I do a lot of different things for my children, just to have the opportunity to see them. But one of the things that comes to mind with this debate is that yes, the benefit of the children to see both parents is very important. But there is a financial aspect to this that comes into play. And when I was going through court, one of the things that my attorney told me very specifically was that you're a man in the state of Massachusetts that has basically Puritan laws, and you will have to pay for that for the rest of your life.
So you're talking about the heavy financial aspect that a divorced father has. I mean, the heavy financial burden that a divorced father has to take on, essentially.
Well, it's not just that. It's the emotional part of not being with your children, because, like I mentioned, I'm a very active father. Dropping them off, and I think the judge mentioned that particularly younger children, my youngest son was 2.5 mm-hmm. when I was unwillingly divorced, and every time I dropped them off, my daughter would not get out of the car. She refused to get out. So there's the emotional piece of it.
Gary, I'm sorry to hear this. You're describing a situation that's heartbreaking, and I'd like to get the response from both our guests. I'll start with you, Judge Langlois.
Well, first of all, Gary, to be credited for desiring and wanting and seeking to spend as much time with your children as possible, I think that's commendable. I have some concern about what you may have been told when you went into court. I don't know the facts or circumstances of your case, but my guess would be, and it's simply a guess, that you probably work on a full-time basis. I don't know if your now ex-wife was what her role was in the home while you were working and living together. I would hope that you have as much time available to you as you can reasonably handle. Mm-hmm. And if that means you could handle 100% of the time and she could handle 100% of the time, and there's no reason why each of you should not be spending as much time as you can with the children, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be sharing the time with the children. My concern about this discussion earlier goes exactly to that point, the definition of shared parenting. People could, if you want to start an argument, ask 10 people what they think shared parenting means, and you'll probably get 10 different positions.
Well, that's why this law defines it, but doesn't mandate it. And it says that we'll define shared parenting as being at least a third of the time with each of the parents. But the law, this bill does not mandate that. And the thing I would add about Gary is the reason he's calling is because he's heartbroken. He's right. not getting to see his kids in the manner to which he was accustomed when he's a perfectly fit and loving father. And this is the common problem. But before we leave this subject, let's remember that the people who are really suffering here are his children. One of his children, I think he said his daughter, won't get out of the car to go back home to mom because she's not getting to see her dad enough. The children are suffering. That's what the researchers are telling us when they tell us the kids need shared parenting. And also, there have been surveys of children themselves. And also, when they get to be 20 years old and they've just recently been children, but now they're adults, and they all say that what I wanted to have was lots of time with both of my parents. So if we're going to listen to the children, we need to institute shared parenting.
All right. Well, I want to bring in another caller. Let's go to Randy, who's calling from Wayland. Randy, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just want a plus one for Gary and Ned. I had a very similar experience. It is absolutely heartbreaking. Just a couple of points briefly. The judge, with all due respect, you know, said that, you know, many of these cases are settled by agreement. That may be technically true, but that's disingenuous to say that because, you know, you're really forced ultimately to settle. You know, I didn't have enough money to fight my very wealthy former spouse on this, although I went to court, you know, many, many times to try to get the custody adjusted. You know, she had a financial incentive to get as much time as she could because that reflects, it's reflected in the child support. And I just think that they should change the default to something closer to shared parenting unless there's some really compelling reason for it not to be that way. And, you know, the judge, you know, I think judges need to have discretion at the end of the day, but there should be some very strict guidelines and gates that these cases pass through that determine, you know, when they can take that action to take an exemption.
All right, Randy, I'm really grateful for your call. We're going to take that thought, leave it on the table for a moment. I want to just get one more call in here. Let's go to Jill, who's calling from Roxbury. Jill, it's good to have you on the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. So my father was ostensibly the stay-at-home dad, but he was an abusive alcoholic, and my mother was the breadwinner. And she's told us now it's 13 years since her parents divorced that she stayed with him for 6 years beyond when she should have because she was worried she would lose us. We were minors, even though I was 15. And if we give the children agency, I feel like they would tell you who they prefer as a parent. I feel often children have enough knowledge and enough emotional baggage already to know which parent they would rather be with.
All right, Jill. Jill, thanks for that. Ned Holstein, actually, I'd like to get both of you to respond to that last point, this idea of giving the children more agency. Ned Holstein, what do you think?
Well, first of all, this is exactly the kind of case in which we would not recommend shared parenting, and the bill that we're talking about would not mandate it in this or any other circumstance. So, of course, there will be exceptions where shared parenting should not be done, and if you have an alcoholic, abusive parent, that's one of them. In fact, there is a law, there is a statute on the Massachusetts books that says no shared parenting, no, not even a little bit of shared parenting if a parent is guilty of domestic violence. And we honor that law. The bill that's up for consideration now in the legislature leaves that statute totally intact, no share of the custody of the child if the person has perpetrated a serious incident or a pattern of domestic violence, and we support that. Now, as far as giving children more agency, in a case such as Jill's, I think a child would have no problem saying, I have an abusive and I have an alcoholic father. I really want to be with my mother. But in the normative case, the usual case, you do not want to put children in the middle of a loyalty dispute between the two parents. You do not want to force a child to express a preference for one parent or the other. There's nothing you could do that would be crueler than that.
Mm. Judge Langlois, do you agree with that?
I agree that you don't want to put children in a position of having to choose between one parent or the other. But if we have a case where there's one child, the child's 16 years old, sophomore or junior in high school, and one parent or the other says, "Judge, you really should talk." Of course, I don't think a judge should talk to any of these children, but you should get the opinion of my son or daughter with regard to certain issues. A guardian ad litem or a probation officer can be appointed solely for the purpose of interviewing the child. Now, obviously, a 16 or 17-year-old child is on one end of the spectrum, and a 4 or 5-year-old child, and I don't think there should be really any involvement of any nature of a 4 or 5-year-old child, is on the other end. But there, again, depending upon the circumstances of a case, a child could and perhaps should be interviewed, depending upon the allegations that are made or the circumstances in any particular case. Mm. I do think older children particularly very often will want to be heard and will feel that no one paid attention to me. I'm 16, 17 years old. I'm driving a car. No one cares what I think. Under those circumstances, if that type of information comes before the court, I think the court should get the information as to what the child's perspective is. Hopefully, it's not a question of choosing. When they're 18, they can choose to live wherever they want. But it's not a question of choosing between two parents, but they should be heard. They are the principal issue in the case, in a custody case.
All right. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Concord. Brian, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was calling because I just picked up this program a few minutes ago. I'm one of the 10% perhaps, who, in fact, Judge Langlois gave me custody of my children years ago. They're older now, and I'm thankful every day for that. I'm concerned that if we went to a one-third, two-thirds kind of custody plan, like the caller who called in before and said that the daughter didn't want to get out of the car, I think for many children, the more transitions, the more difficult it is for the children. I was glad that Judge Langlois saw that in our case and awarded the children to one parent, and they thrive. They went off. They have great lives now. And I'm just concerned that it would be harder for the courts to try to wade through who should have these split custody plans, because I get very concerned about them. I know people are 1 week with one parent, 1 week with another, and I think it's really hard on some children. So,
well, Brian, thanks so much for that perspective, and I'm glad what I know is always a difficult situation worked out for your kids. Ned Holstein, respond to Brian, because this is an argument that you hear a lot about, that in theory, shared custody, nice idea, but in fact, you're talking about shifting kids back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and what they really need perhaps is stability.
So first of all, let's go back to what the children themselves say. Multiple studies, 17 studies, I believe, have shown that if you ask the children what they want is shared parenting, they recognize the inconvenience of going back and forth, but they want to see both parents anyway. Why should this be a surprise? They love both their parents. They miss their parents when they don't see them. But beyond that, let's remember that the typical what is called visitation schedule, a word we don't like very much, also calls for children to go back and forth and back and forth. If they're going to go back and forth every other weekend and Tuesday night or Wednesday night for dinner, that's lots of back and forth. In shared parenting, the only difference would be is that when they go to either of the houses, they just stay there a little longer. Or some other schedule that the parents themselves would work out that works best for that family, but which embodies lots of time for both parents. And I just want to clear up one misunderstanding. This bill does not specify one-third, two-thirds. It doesn't specify any particular split of time. It simply goes to what Bob said, which is the question of how do you define shared parenting. This bill defines it as at least one-third of the time, but it doesn't mandate any particular split of the time.
All right. Let's try to get another caller into this conversation. Lorne is calling from Bridgewater. Lorne, you're on the air. What are you hearing in our debate here?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to say that I think that guardian ad litems ought to be utilized a lot more. Probably should be out of the discretion of the judge's hands. It ought to be I don't want to use the word mandated, but the children ought to be listened to a lot more. When I stood in front of my judge for my temporary orders, I had asked for 3 overnights a week, and the judge, at his discretion, because we had nothing in front of him as an agreement, he only gave me 2 nights, and my children were very dissatisfied with that. And I was able to, $20,000 later, when signing the final divorce agreements, to get my 3rd night. But it was an absolute uphill battle to try to get that.
All right, Lauren. Judge Langlois, what do you hear in Lauren's call? I mean, he'd like something almost like there to be a sort of 50-50 default. I mean, that would be sort of the starting point.
I can appreciate Lauren's situation. I think the cost of a GAL is one of the reasons that they are not used in almost every case. It would be ideal, and I think the judges would love it if they had a GAL in every case. But this is, it's time and it's money, and it's difficult. And people that don't have the means for it, and where there's no probation officer to serve in that capacity, simply are have a difficult time in getting those issues across.
Well, General, I'm sorry to cut you off. We're going to have to sort of pause this debate here. Obviously, the conversation continues. Radio Boston listeners, leave your comments at radioboston.org. But for now, I'm going to say Robert Langlois is a retired family court judge. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And this is a long issue, a long debate ahead.
It certainly is. And Ned Holstein is co-founder of the National Parents Organization. Thank you for coming in and stating your case in this important conversation. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll explore the world of Fab Labs and the dawn of a digital revolution in manufacturing. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.